Translation: having experienced a situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances in different bodies and forgets his actual position. Under this same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another. Tata Dehantara Prapti. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Transmigration of the soul is very clearly explained in this verse. One sometimes forgets his present body and thinks of his childhood body, a body of the past, and of how one was playing, jumping, talking, and so on. When the material body is no longer workable, it becomes dust. For dust thou art, and unto dust shalt thou return. But when the body again mixes with the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, the mind continues to work. The mind is the subtle substance in which the body is created, as we actually experience in our dreams and also when we awake in contemplation. One must understand that the process of mental speculation develops a new type of body that does not actually exist. If one can understand the nature of the mind, mana retena, and its thinking, feeling, and willing, one can very easily understand how, from the mind, different types of bodies develop. The Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, offers a process of transcendental activities wherein the mind is fully absorbed in affairs pertaining to Krishna. The presence of the soul is perceived by consciousness, and one must purify his consciousness from material to spiritual, or in other words, to Krishna consciousness. That which is spiritual is eternal, and that which is material is temporary. Without Krishna consciousness, one's consciousness is always absorbed in temporary things. For everyone, therefore, Krishna recommends in Bhagavad Gita 9:34, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto Madhyajimam Namaskaru. One should always be absorbed in thought of Krishna. One should become his devotee. One should always engage in his service and worship him as the supreme great, and one should always offer him obeisances. In the material world, one is always a servant of a greater person, and in the spiritual world, our constitutional position is to serve the supreme, the greatest, Param Brahma. This is the instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jivera Sarupoi Krishnara Nitya Das. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyalila 20:108. To act in Krishna consciousness is the perfection of life and the highest perfection of yoga. As Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, Yoginam api sarve sham madgatena antaratmana shadavan bhajate yomam samayuktata momata. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. The condition of the mind which flickers between sankalpa and vikalpa, accepting something and rejecting it, is very important in transferring the soul to another material body at the time of death. Yam yam vapi spanam bhavam tyajatanti kalevaram tam tam evaiti kuntiya sadatad bhavita. Whatever state of being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. Bhagavad Gita 8:6. Therefore, one must train the mind in the system of bhakti yoga, as did Maharaj Ambarish, who kept himself always in Krishna consciousness. Savai mana Krishna padaravindayo. One must fix the mind at the lotus feet of Krishna 24 hours a day. If the mind is fixed upon Krishna's lotus feet, the activities of the other senses will be engaged in Krishna's service. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. To serve Rishikesh, the master of the senses, with purified senses, is called bhakti. Those who constantly engage in devotional service are situated in a transcendental state above the material modes of nature. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 14:26, Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, who does not fall down in any circumstance, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. One must learn the secret of success from the Vedic literatures, especially when the cream of Vedic knowledge is presented by Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because the mind is ultimately controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the word apasmriti is significant. Forgetfulness of one's own identity is called apasmritihi. This apasmritihi can be controlled by the Supreme Lord. For the Lord says, Matak smitir ganam apohanam cha. From me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Instead of allowing one to forget one's real position, Krishna can revive one's original identity at the time of one's death, even though the mind may be flickering. Although the mind may work imperfectly at the time of death, Krishna gives a devotee shelter at his lotus feet. Therefore, when a devotee gives up his body, the mind does not take him to another material body. Chaturdeham punarjanma naiti mam eti. Rather, Krishna takes the devotee to that place where he is engaged in his pastimes, mam eti, as we have already discussed in previous verses. One's consciousness, therefore, must always be absorbed in Krishna, and then one's life will be successful. Otherwise, the mind will carry the soul to another material body. The soul would be placed in the semen of a father and discharged into the womb of a mother. The semen and ovum create a particular type of body according to the form of the father and mother. And when the body is mature, the soul emerges in that body and begins a new life. This is the process of transmigration of the soul from one body to another, tata dehantara prapti. Unfortunately, those who are less intelligent think that when the body disappears, everything is finished. The entire world is being misled by such fools and rascals. But as stated in Bhagavad Gita 2:20, Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire, the soul does not die when the body is destroyed. Rather, the soul takes on another body. Swapne Yata Pashati Dehamidrisham. Manorate na binivishta chetana. Drishta shutabhyam manasanu chintayan prapadyate tat kimapi yapash mritihi. Having experienced a situation by seeing or hearing about it, one contemplates and speculates about that situation, and thus one surrenders to it, not considering his present body. Similarly, by mental adjustments, one dreams at night of living under different circumstances, in different bodies, and forgets his actual position. Under this same process, one gives up his present body and accepts another, tata dehantara prapti. Om agyana timirandasya gananjana shilakaya chakshura militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya manobhistam stapitam jena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam. Tadati Svapadanti Kam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunichananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. Make no mistake about it. We are dying. There's no doubt. Every day, from the rising of the sun to its setting, more energy and life is being sapped from this body. It is happening in an imperceptible way. But as the years catch up with us, we begin to realize the truth of Bhagavad Gita, the truth of Srimad Bhagavatam, the truth of Chaitanya Charitamrita. We are living on borrowed time. This time we have right now inside this body is borrowed. 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, 80 years, who can say? Nobody. A four-year-old child is in old age because at any moment that child may die. Therefore, what's old age? Old age means just before you die. That's old age. Srila Prabhupada was very compassionate. He requested the devotees to film his concluding days in Vrindavan, appropriately entitled The Final Lesson. And this is the real meaning of the word acharya, one who teaches by personal example how to live and how to leave with some dignity. Not screaming and shouting like, you know, a complete crazy person. Totally in ignorance, totally unaware. You know when, I'm sure you remember the story when, from the Mahabharata, the lake of death, when the Pandavas came and they wanted to drink the water from this lake because they were thirsty, and a voice came from behind a tree and said, "Don't drink, this water belongs to me." And they all drank except Maharaj Yudhisthira, and the other four brothers fell unconscious. And it turns out that the voice belonged to Yamaraj, and Yamaraj is the father of Maharaj Yudhisthira. And he wanted to ask him some questions. He wanted to test his son to find out how much he understood about spiritual life. So one of the questions that Yamaraj asked Maharaj Yudhisthira was, "What's the most amazing thing?" "It's right under our nose and we don't see it. We just don't see it. Look in the mirror today. Look. Take a good long look at yourself and describe what you see. Do you like it? Then 1 year from now, look again. You'll see the difference." Yamaraj says to Maharaj Yudhisthira, "What's the most amazing thing?" He says, "The most amazing thing is that every day thousands and thousands and thousands and millions of living entities are being dragged to the court of Yamaraj, the abode of death. But what's everybody else thinking? Not me. Somehow or other, I'm going to drag on. I'm going to carry on." Doesn't it feel nice and warm and fuzzy inside this body? If you got some good health, it feels nice, doesn't it? That's Maya. That's Maya. Maya's disguise is her surprise, and her surprise is her disguise. And she gets us every time. Maya has us convinced that we are this body. What reinforces that is sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada mentions here in this purport something really crucial to our progress as devotees, as human beings on this planet. He says that the mind has two businesses, sankalpa vikalpa, accept, reject. It's kind of like pond life in a way. You know, if you look at a bunch of amoeba on a slide in a laboratory, they just sort of move around, and if the scientist heats up a probe and puts it near them, they run away. So what's happening? If it feels good, I accept it. If it doesn't feel good, I reject it. That's material. That's mundane sense gratification. So at every moment, impressions are coming in through our senses. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin. It's constant. We're seeing things, we're smelling things, we're hearing things, we're touching things, we're tasting things. What are these impressions doing? These impressions are giving shape to the subtle body. It's morphing. The subtle body is morphing at this very moment according to the impressions that are coming in. And when it's time to leave this body, the condition of that subtle body will bring us to the next gross body. And I think this is one of those times where Srila Prabhupada would probably say, "This you must always keep in view." Wherever we put our attention, that is what we will become. If we put our attention on Maya, on materialistic impulses and materialistic stimuli, the subtle body is morphing into something material. If we keep our attention on Krishna, then the subtle body is morphing into something spiritual. Then in the next life, instead of getting a body that's ungodly, we'll get a body that's godly. And the scary part of the whole thing is it's our choice. We need to start making some informed choices. We have some very bad habits, materialistic habits, in terms of accept and reject. And that's after long period in this material world. Those of us, and there are many of us here, I have to sit in a chair now. Didn't have to do that. When I first came to this country 26 years ago, I didn't have to sit in a chair. If I would sit on the Vyasasan now, and when the class was finished, three of you would have to lift me up. You know what that is? That's color. That's time. That's the time factor. And I promise you, time takes it all away. Remember that DVD where Srila Prabhupada is in his back garden of the Los Angeles temple, and all those Ari professors are there, religion education professors? Prabhupada was trying to explain the existence of God. And Prabhupada said, God will come one day. He will take your everything. He'll take your bank balance, your skyscraper buildings, all taken away. Prabhupada said, as sure as death, and God is sure, that one has to believe. Therefore, anyone who says he's not a believer in God, he's a madman. So one of the professors at that time said to Prabhupada, Your Grace, wouldn't it be better to say he's blind, he's stupid? And Prabhupada replied, yes, mad is the sum total of all stupidity. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Kalosmi, I am time. Time is a manifestation of Krishna's will. And as we well know, time gives and time takes. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. Absolutely nothing. You know, we're a captive audience. You know, somebody once said, you know, we're captive on the carousel of time. We can't return. We can only look from behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle game. That's it. Birth, old age, disease, and death. Birth, old age, disease, and death. I promise you, it's the only show in town. There's nothing else going on out there. In between birth and old age, disease, and death, there's some flapping and fluttering going on. What is that flapping and fluttering? That flapping and fluttering is falsely called civilization, material civilization. The senses are constantly pushing for engagement. The eyes want to see, the ears want to hear, the nose wants to smell, the tongue wants to taste, and the skin wants to touch. So what are we tasting? What are we hearing? What are we smelling? What are we seeing? What are we touching? That's why Srila Prabhupada says here, the process of bhakti enables us to engage all our senses in the service of the Lord. And in that way, we are preparing for ourselves a much better birth. Whereas if we engage ourselves in the service of Maya, well, destination unknown. I remember in the early days at Soho Street, sometimes the students would come from the schools and they're very curious about reincarnation. And, people with a poor fund of knowledge will say things like, well, I don't care if I take birth as a dog. I don't care if I become a bird. I don't care if I become a fish. I don't care about any of these things, you know, because after all, they look like they have a pretty good life. Do they? Do they? Prabhupada says in one place that the necessities of the animals and necessities, basic necessities of the human being are the same. And in the animal species of life, those necessities are satisfied sometimes under the most abominable conditions. You know, keep your eyes open. You'll see it right around here. There's animals all over the place around here at the manor. The little chipmunks or squirrels, whatever, they'll come and they'll get some nuts. And while they're eating the nuts, they're looking around like this. They can't even enjoy their nuts. Why? Because they're thinking, who's going to come and eat them? Jivo jivasya jivanam. One living entity is food for another. Where do we think we are? We think we're in a playground. You know, hell's been defined in many different ways. One way is that it's the impossibility of reason. Nothing makes any sense. That's hell. Hell really means being separated from Krishna. Of course, in the fifth canto, there are certain geographical locations where, don't want to get into it now, the punishment fits the crime. But the point is that the choice is ours. So we need to be careful about what we allow in, through the eyes, through the ears, through the nose, through the tongue, through the skin. Because whatever we allow in, that shapes our subtle body. And whatever shape that body's in at the time of death, we will receive a corresponding gross body. You know? Somebody once said, I think, therefore I am. Right. That's true. That's correct. Whatever you have in your mind, whatever you meditate on, whatever is the sum total of your meditation in the next life, that's where you're going. It's a big illusion, isn't it? Komara Yovanam Jara. Prabhupada says in the purport, we remember sometimes, don't we? The child body and different things that happened to us and different people we knew over the years. I always like the story of Maharaj Chitraketu. You know, he wanted to have a son, and he tried and he tried and he tried. He couldn't have a son. So finally, Narada Muni, who is the supreme catalyst in all of Krishna's pastimes, Narada Muni appears to him and he says, you want to have a son? Okay, I can arrange it. We'll perform a sacrifice. You know, who's your favorite queen? Krita Dyuti. Good, she can eat some of the oblations. You'll have a son. But I have to warn you about something. This son will be called Harshashoka. He will bring you happiness and distress simultaneously. You still want to do it? Yeah, yeah, want to have a son. Okay. Don't say I didn't warn you. So the son was born. So naturally the king and queen were, you know, overjoyed. You know, we've had a child, a nice boy, you know. And they were, you know, two typical doting parents. I remember when my son was born back in the day, I was like that with him. So naturally, the other queens became neglected because the king, you know, was going to naturally pay more attention to the queen who had the son. So the other queens were being ignored. You know, and you know what they say? Hell hath no fury. So one day when the king and the queen went out, right, on a, whatever they went into the shopping or whatever they did, the other queens came in and poisoned the little boy. So when the king and queen came back, you know, they're thinking, oh, let's go see our little son. And there he is dead in his crib. You know, this kind of stuff happens every day, doesn't it? All over the world. Oh, it's dreadful. This is a dreadful place. It's horrible. It's just terrible. You know what Prabhupada said? I heard the exact word he used describing the material world. He said, nasty. He said, this is a nasty place. Nasty. So naturally, the king and queen were plunged into an ocean of grief. Our son has been killed. You know, what are we going to do? So forth and so on. So Narada Muni comes forward and says to the king, and now today I will teach you a lesson. So he called to the soul that had left the body of the small boy. Narada Muni called, O soul! O soul! And the little boy sat up in his crib. Wow. So Maharaj Chitraketu says, my son, you've come back. You're back, back to life. And then the soul in the body of that small boy began to speak, but not like a small child. He began to speak like a self-realized soul. And he says to Maharaj Chitraketu, Father, are you my father? He says, I'm a traveling soul in every mother's son. Please tell me, which father are you? Which mother is this? I've had so many. I'm a traveling soul and every mother's son. Although I'm getting tired, I have to travel on. I move from body to body to body to body to body, according to my desires. So, it's getting scary. I know death is, Prabhupada says, closer than your eyelid, and it's becoming ever more increasingly apparent. I can't do what I did 20 years ago with this body. You see, I'm sitting in the chair. As I said, if I sat on the Vyasasana, it would take 5 of you to pick me up afterwards. You know, that's the way it is. That's life. That's the manufacturer's design. You ever hear that one before? The manufacturer's design. We talked about that once before, didn't we? But who's the manufacturer? It's Krishna himself. He has designed, he has programmed this world to fail. He has programmed these bodies to fail. This is a place of failure. You know, the only success is to become Krishna conscious, get out, and go back to Godhead. Here in the purport, Prabhupada says, at the time of death, it says, if the devotee's mind is very disturbed, Krishna can come and take him back to Godhead anyway. But Prabhupada uses the word can. He doesn't say will. He doesn't say he will. He says he can. It depends on the quality of the consciousness of the candidate. If someone's qualified for that, they'll get it, certainly. Krishna will come to the rescue. Did you ever see that? You must have seen it. The painting where the devotee's in the ocean. It's supposed to be the ocean of birth and death. He's got one arm up like this, and Krishna comes swooping down on Garuda to pull him out, you know. Krishna's famous for creating a situation or a problem that only he can solve. He likes to be the hero. We're part of his leela. And somebody told me that a few months ago. They said, us being here in the material world is also Krishna's leela. You know, and he likes action. So sometimes Krishna puts his devotees in, you know, awkward circumstances to teach a lesson to the rest of the world, to test their tolerance and strength of mind. The first thing that I thought of was, next time pick somebody else. You know, as the years go by, I'm starting to feel more and more like a lab rat, you know, that's being experimented on, you know, to teach something or, you know, illustrate some point, you know. But see, that's the thing. The pure devotee is completely malleable to the will of the Lord. And that's why we're here. We want to become pure devotees. It's really getting worse and worse, isn't it? When I first came to this country, it was 1989, I used to take the Harinam out every day from Soho Street Temple, 6 days a week. I used to lead the Harinam. You know how it is at Soho Street? Sometimes there's only 2 people on the Harinam because nobody else wants to go, and you have to grab somebody and try to talk to them and convince them to go and all that. We used to run. We used to run from Soho Street all the way up to practically Selfridges, crossover, run all the way back. If I tried to do that today, I'd have a heart attack. I went on the Harinam, the Saturday night Harinam from the Manor, about a month and a half ago, and I wanted to make a film. You know, the video of the Harinam with my phone. I couldn't even keep up. I kept falling behind. My legs started to hurt. I'm struggling to catch up with everybody. I was going out of breath, you know. Govinda, Govinda from Scotland does such a wonderful kirtan. All the devotees were running down, you know, running through the streets of Chinatown, and I'm trying to catch up, you know. And when the Harinam stopped, I thought, oh, thank God, you know. Now we can stand here for a few minutes, I can catch my breath. But while I was doing it, I thought to myself, guess what, Rags? You're dying. You're actually dying. This body is dying. Just a simple thing like that. I couldn't even keep up with the Harinam. It struck me. This body is dying. Every day, more life is going. The problem is that we want to make a permanent settlement in a temporary place. It's not possible. We're just guests. We're visitors here. We're paying rent. We're renting a flat. And very soon, you know, the landlord, the Lord of the manor, the real Lord of the manor, will come and kick us out. We'll be evicted. You know? Krishna will come and say, okay, come on, time to vacate the flat. And then it'll be too late. You know? Satsvarup wrote a great poem some years ago. He said it had to do with traveling. And it was about traveling in an airplane. And he said, I don't remember the whole poem, but I'll just tell you what I remember. He says, if the plane crashes and you're thinking of your favorite girl, it's too late. And too late to erase your karma for slaughtered cows. You know, death comes like a thief in the night. Maybe if we're lucky, Maharaj Pariksit was lucky. You know, Krishna gave him a warning. All right, you got 7 days. Great. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. You know, he was lucky, but there's some people not so lucky. A friend of mine, I don't know if anybody knows Charu Chandrika. Charu Chandrika used to be a devotee here at the manor. I knew her about maybe 15, 20 years ago. And then she started traveling, and she was going around India and here, there, and everywhere. And I think she eventually took initiation from somebody in the Gaudiya Math or whatever. I forget what she did. But I heard recently that she was walking down the road in Vrindavan in the evening, and a lorry came and squashed her. A lorry came from behind and squashed her. Did you ever look at a lorry? You see all those metal things hanging underneath? It just scraped her up. She's in hospital now in Bristol. You know, they don't even know if she's going to make it. You know, so there are no guarantees. Cancer is usually the big one that Krishna sends to the devotees. He gives them a chance to prepare. When I was living in Vrindavan, I remember two devotees in particular who came there to leave their bodies. They both had brain cancer. The first one was this boy from Canada who was a big book distributor, and he turned up with brain cancer, so he came to Vrindavan to leave his body. Room number one in the guest house, after a while we called it the launching pad, because so many devotees who were going to die came there and they would stay in room number one. And we used to go around and we made friends with him. We used to read Bhagavatam together. And then one morning I woke up and somebody said to me, Nakadi left his body. And I was like, ugh, you know. I was just talking to him yesterday afternoon. We were having a chat. So we carried his body down to the burning ghat and in Vrindavan. And we got down to the burning ghat. I had never been to a cremation before. So for me it was a huge surprise. Huge. And they took his body and they put it on a pyre, funeral pyre, right next to the Yamuna. And I noticed, looking in the Yamuna River, I saw these little eyes. And just under the surface of the water, all these little eyes coming in. So I said to one of the devotees, what are these eyes? He said, the turtles know the program. You know, they're coming for their bit. They're coming for their share. Jivo jivasya jivanam. Prabhupada said it, someday this body will be the food of jackals and worms. So then they started throwing ghee on his body. I said, why are you throwing ghee? They said, well, ghee lights, ignites very easily, you know. So they lit the fire, and we're all standing there chanting. And then, you know, typical India, there wasn't enough wood. So the fire went out prematurely. Ah, you can imagine what we saw. And so they said to one of the devotees, go get some more wood. So he says, yeah, okay, I'll take a bullock's cart. I thought, my God, he might come back next month, you know. So I thought, I'm not going to stand down here waiting for a bullock. You know, a devotee to take a bullock's cart to go and get more wood to finish burning this body. So I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go back to the mandir. I'm going to go back to Krishna Balaram mandir and just sort of hang out, you know, and see if I can find some sense gratification somewhere. And then one of the devotees called me and said, hey, Raghunath, come here. Look at this, look at this, look at this. I said, what? I came over and I looked, and from the heat of the fire, the torso of the body had exploded. And all that was inside was unraveling and coming out onto the ground. You know? Sometimes Krishna uses shock therapy, you know, to snap us back into Krishna conscious mode. And when I saw that, you know, I mean, during the war, I worked in a hospital, I thought I was being clever, you know, I avoid the front lines, don't have to get my head shot off. So you can imagine what a hospital's like during the war. And I saw some pretty grisly things, you know, people missing arms and legs and burns. But I never saw anything like this. His body just opened, and whatever was inside was just rolling out and going all over the ground. I said to the devotee next to me, I said, I think I'm going back to the mandir, Prabhu, I'll see you later. So I went back to the mandir, and I was in shock. I couldn't believe it. I was shaking. My hands were shaking. I couldn't breathe properly. Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. I was actually in shock. And then I thought, what's the first thing you think of in times like that? Sense gratification. I got to find some sense gratification to take my mind off of what I just experienced, what I just saw. Where is it? Where's the sense gratification? Couldn't find it anywhere. I could not justify any sense gratification. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll go lie down in my room. So I went to my room. I lied down on the bed. And then I started thinking, wow, that could be me out there tomorrow burning in those flames. So I had to go get up, take a glass of water. Nothing to do with this body made any sense. Nothing. It's like getting hit with 50,000 volts of electricity from Krishna that, look, you're not this body. Do you believe me now? You know? And for like 2 or 3 weeks, I just couldn't. All I did was eat just to stay alive. I couldn't enjoy anything. Now, there was a feast. You know, if somebody dies, they put on a feast. I couldn't enjoy the feast. It was terrible, you know. All I could think about is, you know, who am I? You know, what is this thing that I call my body, and what am I doing inside this thing? So seeing that dead body explode like that really shocked me into some very serious Krishna conscious realization. And I stayed like that for about a month. I couldn't believe it. I could not justify any sense gratification whatsoever. And here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is indicating that this is vital, because however we engage our senses, that shapes the subtle body. And that determines at the time of death the next gross body. So, you know, this is the world of birth and death. Sripad Shankaracharya said it, Krishne Matir Astu. Your attention should be fixed on Krishna. He said it for a reason. This is the reason, you know, because wherever we fix our attention, that's where we're going. That's where we're going when we leave this body. Shankaracharya was, of course, Lord Shiva. What did he say to his followers before he left? He kind of revealed himself. He said, Bajagovinda, 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 Mudhamate, Samprapte Senahite Kale, Nahi Nahi Rakshati, Dukrim Karane. You intellectual fools, you intellectual fools, you intellectual fools, just worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda. All your grammatical knowledge and word jugglery will not save you at the time of death. You know, some things happen to you in your life that you just don't forget, even if you want to. I don't know if anybody remembers Bhakta Bernie. He used to hang around Soho Street a lot. Big, tall fellow. He used to be a bouncer. He used to be a doorman in the clubs in London. Great big fellow, well over 6 feet tall, big muscles and everything. And I knew him for many years. He never got for some reason he never got initiated, but he goes back to the days of Srila Prabhupada. And he would always come to Soho Street and render some service there. So it was, I think, Kartik of 2010, I think. Or no, 2009. I'm sitting in my house. I get a text from my good friend Luke, Bhakta Luke from Hendon. Those of you who know Rupa Raghunath, I think you all know Rupa Raghunath. Rupa Raghunath's got his project in Vrindavan where they built an orphanage and they've got a school and so many things. So this Luke works with him and helps him finance it. So I get a text from Luke. Now, just push the rewind button for a second. This is what? November. The previous Rath Yatra in the summertime, I remember going to the Trafalgar Square. I walk into Trafalgar Square. First person I meet is Bernie, Bhakta Bernie. And he looked fine. And we sat down together on the stone steps. We're talking about old times, talking about Soho Street, talking about this, that, and the other. Luke happens to appear. The three of us go, and we're having tea, a cup of tea in the, that little key, what do you call it, cafe underneath Trafalgar Square. And then 5 or 6 months later, I get a text saying, Bernie's just been diagnosed with lung cancer. Now, what I didn't know, I found out later that somehow, you know, for about 40 years, he'd been smoking 2 or 3 packs of cigarettes a day, and it finally caught up with him. So I said to Luke, I said, where is he? He said, well, he's in St. Mary's Hospital in London. I said, can we go and see him? He said, well, he said, we have to check with his older daughter because she's the one looking after him. I said, okay, keep in touch. So then a few weeks later, I get another text from Luke saying, Bernie's just been moved to St. John's Hospice in St. John's Wood. Hospital means you got a chance. Hospice means you got no chance. You're on your way out. In a hospice, they just make you comfortable because they know you're going to die. You know you're going to die. That's the point of no return. So when I found out, I went to St. John's Hospice. It was on a Tuesday evening. I still remember it. And there were so many devotees there from Soho Street. It was like trying to get in to see the Pope or something, you know. His room was packed full of devotees. There was a kirtan going on. And his daughter did such a wonderful job looking after him. She had Vrindavan dust. She was going around putting Vrindavan dust on his head, on our heads, you know, put tulsi leaves in his mouth. And cancer ate him down to the bone. I could have lifted him off the sheets. Before that, he was this huge person, you know. And he's lying on the bed, and he was doing this. He was going, he couldn't breathe properly because of the cancer. And he was all drugged up with morphine and everything. And I'm standing there looking at that, and I thought, wow, here it is. You are face to face with reality, the reality of living in the material world. There it is. Take a good look at it. And I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And it just, my senses got kind of overwhelmed, so I left. I went back the next night. Hari Kirtan had come in and led a big kirtan, so when I arrived, Bernie was kind of a little bit peaceful. And before I had to leave because I had to go to work the next day, and somebody said, he can still hear in his right ear. Go and, if you want to say something to him, go say it in his right ear. So I went up to him and I said, Bernie, it's Raghunath. I said, I have to go because I have to go to work tomorrow, but I'll be back to see you tomorrow. The next day, I think, was going to be Friday or something, and it was an Ekadasi. So the next morning, I'm on my way to work, and I sent a text to Luke, and I said, how's Bernie? He said, he left us at 5 o'clock this morning. By the way, a Makala left on the same day as Bernie. They left an hour apart. One left at 5 o'clock in the morning, the other left around 6. And Trishi Radhagokulananda Ki Jai. And that was the least of it. That was the least of that experience. What came later was even more intense. They requested me and 2 other devotees from Soho Street to go and prepare his body for viewing by his family members. I never did anything like that in my life. I've seen dead bodies before. I'd seen people die during the war and stuff, but I never had to actually get involved with a dead body. So they wheeled him out, you know, on the table with wheels. And, you know, his eyes were open like this. And somebody said to me, close his eyes. So I closed his eyes. And the left eye kept opening. Yeah. I was shaking in my boots. I was. I said, shut his eyes. So I shut his eyes, and the left eye kept opening. You know? And I looked inside, and then I understood the meaning of the lights are on, but nobody's home. It was like looking into a fisheye. Finally, I got the eye to stay closed, you know. And then we had to put a dhoti on him. We put tilak on him, put a kurta on him. And then we had to lift him up and put him in the box, you know, the coffin from the table on the wheels. It was like, and that day I finally understood the meaning of dead weight. It was almost impossible to lift him. finally, we had to roll him off the table into the box, and we decorated the box with flowers, and you know, and he actually looked very peaceful. And then finally, his family members came and to say their final goodbyes. I'm hoping that the kirtan he heard near the end sent him to a better place. Sometimes devotees think, oh, he heard the holy name at the time of death. That means he's gone back to Goloka Vrindavan. Maybe. Maybe. It takes a little more than that. It takes a lot more than that. Prabhupada says it in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says it. After long practice of yoga, somebody may take birth in a family of Vaishnavas, pure devotees. After short practice of yoga, in a family of wealthy aristocrats, but they pick up from where they left off. There was this woman named Lilavati, another cancer person. When she told us she had cancer, the first thing I thought was, I said, go to Vrindavan. Don't hang around here. Go to Vrindavan. Finish it off there. So somehow or other she managed to get over to Vrindavan, and her passing was very difficult. She had a difficult time. It was very painful. But I'm hoping she went to a good place. I missed Srila Prabhupada's passing. I was in the West. When Prabhupada left us, I was in the West distributing books on that day. But you know what happened? On the day Prabhupada left, we were in the airport, the Philadelphia airport, distributing big books. An Indian family came in, so I stopped them, you know, and showed them Bhagavad Gita and all that. And we had a chat. In the middle of the chat, this man says to me, I want to show you some photos. So he had about 25 or 30 color Polaroid photos in his pocket. I said, where are you coming from? He said, oh, we are coming from India. We have just come from funeral. One of our family members has died. This was on Prabhupada's disappearance day. So he shows me these photos, and the photos were of him and his family posing with the dead body. I never saw anything like that in my life. They're actually posing around the coffin, around the dead body. Not smiling, certainly, but they were posing for pictures with the dead body. And I thought, boy, this is really strange. Then when we got home that night, back to the temple president called everybody in the prasadam room, and he said, I just want to let you know that at such and such time, Srila Prabhupada left his body. But, you know, he reasons ill who says that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. I feel that Srila Prabhupada is more accessible now than he was then, because he's not confined or constricted by a body. He can be anywhere. He can be in everyone's heart. He can travel all over the universe. You know, he's more accessible now than he was then. And I remember, it's getting late, I'll finish with this. After Prabhupada left, Satsvarup again wrote an article for Back to Godhead magazine describing that moment in Prabhupada's rooms when he left. And he said that when it became clear to all the assembled devotees in Prabhupada's room that Prabhupada had finally left, he said it was unanimously obvious he was still in charge. He was still in charge. You could feel it. You could feel, they said, you can actually feel his presence. When we come in the temple room, we feel Prabhupada's presence. Everywhere. You know? These are Prabhupada's walls. This is Prabhupada's floor. This is Prabhupada's building. Everything on this campus, every molecule, every atom, is the personal property of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Nothing is ours. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Not one speck. Not one speck. So I guess I'm talking to myself now more than anybody else. I wanted to leave you with this one thought that we're suffering from a case of mistaken identity. Somebody once said, suspended from a rope inside a bucket down a hole, his hands are torn and bloody from his scratching at his soul. Struggling with confusion, disillusionment too, can turn a man into a shadow, crying out for love. Through his nightmare vision, he sees nothing, only wealth. Blind with a beggar's mind, he's but a stranger to himself. Okay, any questions or comments?